might make me sound good. Then again, it's good to have you all here this evening. Ladies, good to have you here. Great to see you again. I know you could be a lot of different places tonight. I'm glad you're here. And you honor us with your presence. Well, hey, I haven't taught on this in 2 weeks, so let's try to catch up a little bit. We were looking at Daniel and that prophecy in Daniel where he saw four beasts. And they were four consecutive empires. And then he saw the last beast was a beast with 10 horns. And we were told the horns represented 10 kings. But then there was a little horn that came up. And there was a scary horn. And so I want to review that and maybe take just a few minutes to review it. And then I want to talk to you about how that prophecy makes its way into Revelation in the Church of God thinking. So I want to try to bridge that tonight. My friend Rick Ballard is here. Rick, Tina. Rick taught on the book of Revelation for how long? 1 year on Sunday night, and your church survived it. But did you? And so you're still going. So if you have questions, Rick Ballard is here. And so trap Rick in the lobby. Rick's got the answer to whatever you got a question about. If you don't know Tina, stay away. Tina's mean. Stay away from Tina. I'm joking. Tina's here. All right, so these four beasts, four kingdoms, and you can go back and maybe listen. This is the world 671 B.C. This is the world about 700 years before Jesus was born. Daniel's writing here about 550 B.C., about 120 years after this. At this time, the world was controlled by the big blue empire, the Assyrians. Assyrians. Before the Assyrians, there really wasn't a world empire in that area. But the Assyrians came in, and in about 20 years, they conquered about everything. Now, Israel, and Israel's where really the history is playing out, and that's why the Assyrians are important, sort of up there against the Mediterranean Sea. You see the little island out there, the blue? It's the land right in there, and many of you would know that. Israel, Egypt's on down, and so they didn't capture all of Egypt, but they got pretty close to capturing Egypt. And so the Assyrians swept through, that's not one of the beasts, but that's where the world was. So then after the Assyrians came, anybody remember this? Babylonians. Babylonians came after the Assyrians. So next screen, if you will. So the Babylonians start over there. They sort of started small. They're the little red country, but they grew. So next slide, 20 years after that, goodbye Assyrians. Babylonians are in town. And notice they conquer Israel, which at that point was a divided nation of Judah and Israel. And the Babylonians, actually the Assyrians got the northern part, but the Babylonians finished them off and got the southern part. So the Babylonians got them. And then after the Babylonians, so that was the first of the four beasts that Daniel talked about. But then there was a second beast. And what was the second beast? It was the beast with two heads, right? And two humps. One hump was bigger than the other one. The Medo-Persians. So here come the Medo-Persians. 100 years later, they conquer it all. Notice they get Israel too, and then they keep pushing. But then Daniel said there was a third beast, right? And the third beast was who? The Greeks, Alexander the Great. It was a leopard. He moved fast between the age of about 20 and the age of 33. It took him 13 years to do that. He got it all. But he came sort of from the east. So the Greeks, and then after Alexander, when he died, by the way, in what city? Where did he make it? Made it to Babylon and died in Babylon. And then the kingdom was divided four different ways. Next slide, if you will, Brother Bill. And then after them was the fourth empire, the dreaded beast, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, at least the European part of the Roman Empire, after it divided, was made up of 10 nations. And almost, I don't know of anyone, whether or not, and let me put it this way, whatever your persuasion is in return, in regards to prophecy, I don't know of anyone who doesn't say the 10 horns on that fourth beast were the 10 nations of Europe. There's divisions, but we agree on that. So then the Roman Empire, that was the fourth empire. But then, after the Roman Empire, or after the kingdoms, came the little horn. And the little horn had 10 characteristics. Oh, there's the division of the Greek Empire. All right, one more, Brother Bill. I don't know why. Okay, so the 10 horns are 10 kingdoms who come from this last beast. And after them, another king will arise, different than the earlier ones. He will subdue 3 kings. Now, let's go to the next slide. So those are the 10. I didn't get them in order, did I? I'm ahead of myself, right? So those are the 10 kingdoms. Those are the 10 horns that commonly agreed on. Now the next slide. So the little horn, that's what Daniel's concerned about, because you got the 4 kingdoms, but then the little horn, that's the scary booger. So what's the little horn? Now, some would say, well, that's the Antichrist, and the Roman Empire will be reconstituted at the end of time. Somehow the Roman Empire will be reconstituted, and there'll be an Antichrist ruler that comes out of that Roman Empire. But by the way, I should say this. A lot of times today, if you watch TV, prophecy experts, they talk a lot about Russia, right? Right. And so, you know, because in Ezekiel 38, for instance, it talks about the invasion from the north, Gog and Magog, and from the north, Israel will be invaded, right? So Russia gets talked about. What's north of Israel? Russia. But notice those 4 kingdoms, where they all come from. They all came from the north. Russia's already been invaded at least 4 times from the north. So again, when you read those prophecies, it's important to maybe say, well, what's the context? Because Isaiah's writing during the Assyrians. Isaiah's in the 8th century B.C. Actually, the Assyrians, they were invaded 5 times if you count the Assyrians. Assyrians sort of came east and the north. Babylonians, east, north. Medo-Persians from the sort of east but north. Greeks came north. Romans came north. So you say, you know, near the end of time, Israel is going to be invaded. The Old Testament says from the north. That's got to be the Russians. Well, again, they've already been invaded from the north 5 different times. All 5 of those kingdoms sort of came up from the north. So, you know, so you say, well, it could be, and I'm not saying Russia doesn't play into anything. I'm just saying that the burden of proof, if you say these passages are about Russia because it's talking about an invader from the north, you gotta rule out the other 5 to get there, I think. So that's part of that. But anyway, there's a little horn. Traits. The little horn comes up after the 10 horn. So if you say, well, you got these 10 nations in Europe, it's going to come up after those nations. Comes up among the other horns. So it's in Europe. Little horn has power. But it's a little kingdom. It's a little horn. So we're talking about a person or an organization that comes up in Europe among the 10 horns, but it's small. So the kingdom is small. Its power is different. It is a king, but it's a different kind of king. Not like the other king. It's not like your traditional king. And then 5, it subdues or plucks up 3 other of the 10 kingdoms. And I'm going to touch on that again tonight. And then 6, the little horn will speak boastful words. And then it'll also speak blasphemous words, you know. And then it'll persecute the saints of the Most High. It'll rule over them for time and a half. And I won't go into all of that. We talked about that three weeks ago. And then it'll change the times and law. So people say, well, that's, there are people who say, well, that's a coming Antichrist. See, but the Church of God, along with every major Protestant reformer before 1900, saw that as the rise of the papacy. Papacies in Europe, Vatican is small. The institution of the papacy was a king. Remember, the papacy basically told who could be king or not. They set up the kings and took them down in Europe. They were like an overarching king. They were blasphemous, claimed to be the vicar of Christ on earth. So Protestant reformers had saw that little horn as representative of the papacy. And by papacy, I'm not as much talking, I am talking about the Pope, but I'm talking about the Pope when, again, the papacy had the ability to essentially control all of Europe. All of Europe. Now, I think here's the point, and I want to say this to bridge us into Revelation. Much of prophecy and much of Revelation is to tell us about coming persecution. So when you say, we got prophecy in the Bible, Daniel's given us prophecy, Revelation gives prophecy. In some ways, the intent of the prophecy is to predict the enemies of the people of God so that we will be faithful when it comes. We won't be taken by surprise. And so, again, even Daniel's vision is to say, listen, these folks are coming, these folks are coming, these folks are coming, these folks are coming. God sees it all. God knows it all. God understands what's coming. And if you'll be faithful to Him, you all survive it. You all survive it. I have a plan. This stuff isn't catching me off guard. Remember, Daniel again is talking about in the midst of all of the kingdoms rising and falling, God is setting up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. God's plans are not subservient to the plans of man. Men do their worst, but still God remains, and those who trust in God are on a foundation. The storms come, the waves blow, the sand, and those who build on the sand are destroyed. But if you build your life on a rock, everything going on in the world isn't going to destroy you. But again, the prophecy is to tell you in many ways what's coming, the persecution that's coming. And so the three great persecutors of the church in our age, now you could say in Israel's age, those nations were the great persecutors, particularly Babylon. So when you say, who were the great enemies of the people of God after they became a nation? You're talking about the Assyrians came in and the Babylonians and the Persians came in and then the Greeks came in, then the Romans came in. Those were the great persecutors. Those were the great killers of the faithful in the Old Testament. But who are the great enemies of the people of God in the New Testament? And there's really three great eras, really, up until 1700s. The first was, again, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire. They persecuted the Jewish people, and then when the church was born into existence, the Roman Empire was the great first persecutor of the Christian church. In fact, how many of the disciples died as martyrs? All of them but John. Who killed him? Romans killed him. Tertullian said the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. The Romans, nobody knows, but the estimate is that over 400 years, the Romans killed 2 million Christians. That's the broad estimate. Remember Polycarp, the Isaac sang a song about him, "He ain't never done me wrong." Remember that? Polycarp was one of the great martyrs. When they were burning him at the stake, they asked him to renounce, and he said, 86 years I have served him, and he has done me no wrong." You have Perpetua and Felicity. Anybody know those names? I think there was a book written about them lately. Perpetua and Felicity. So you have they were famous martyrs at Lyon in 177 A.D. I'll just read this. "The Christians were greatly persecuted, and even before the violence started, Christians were forbidden from the marketplace, the forum, the baths, or to appear in public spaces. They were eventually basically just destroyed." And I mean, you want to read about some bloodthirsty stuff happening, read about what happened to the martyrs. And I think you know, they were put in the arenas, they were eaten by the lions, they were burned at the stake. They were just greatly, greatly persecuted. The Roman Empire tried everything they could to destroy the church, and the church survived, right? But then, who was the next, and I don't mean to say this demeaningly, but who was the next great persecutor of the Christians after the Roman Empire? It was the Catholic Church. It was the papacy. In fact, is there a slide right after this? Go to the next slide, if you will. This is what Thomas Hobbes said. He said, "If a man consider the origin of this great ecclesiastical dominion, the papacy, he will easily perceive that the papacy is no other than the ghost of the deceased Roman Empire sitting crowned upon the grave thereof. For so did the papacy start up on a sudden out of the ruins of that heathen power." So you had the Caesar who was persecuting, but Caesar falls in 476, and by 535, sitting in Rome was the Pope. And over the next 1,000 years, the most conservative estimate is that the Roman Catholic Church, in its political power, again, Caesar claimed to be God at times, but he was also the emperor. The Pope claimed to be the representative of God on earth, but he was also the ruler of the of Europe, essentially. Do whatever he wanted to. The most conservative estimate over the next 1,000 years was that the political papacy had 50 million Christians killed. 50 million. Some say up to 150 million. I've read detailed accounts of how they get to 68 million, and that's a good number too. But over 1,000 years. Again, 400 years, 2 million by the Roman Empire, but you're talking about 50 million people. You say, well, that was over 1,000 years. Listen, Europe during that time period was never, the population was 50 to 100 million people. You take 50 million people, which is the most conservative estimate, that's 500,000 people every 10 years. That is a genocide every 10 years for 1,000 years. There's a reason why they call it the Dark Ages. The Inquisition lasted about 350 years. Just let me read to you 4 or 5 paragraphs about the Inquisition. Inquisition was when the Pope would send people in to nations, and they would basically put anybody on trial who they thought was not loyal to the papacy. If they suspected you weren't loyal to the papacy, you were going on trial and you were going to die. And so it says, refusing to confess at the first hearing, Saul heretics, anybody that was not in complete accordance with the papacy at the, and remember how crooked some of the popes were. The dungeons were situated underground so that the outcries of the subject might not reach other parts of the building. In some medieval cells, the inauspicious were bound in stocks or chains, unable to move about and forced to sleep standing up or on the ground. In some cases, there was no light, ventilation. Inmates were generally starved and kept in solitary confinement in dark and allowed no contact with the outside world, including their own families. In 1252, Pope Innocent IV officially authorized the creation of the horrifying Inquisition torture chambers. It also included a nude perpetual imprisonment or death at the stake without the bishop's consent. Acquittal of the accused was now virtually impossible. Thus, with license granted by the Pope himself, inquisitors were free to explore the depths of horror and cruelty, dressed as black-robed fiends with black cowls over their head. Inquisitors could extract confessions from just about anyone. The Inquisition invented every conceivable device to inflict pain by slowly dismembering and dislocating the body. Many of those devices were inscribed with the motto, "Glory be only to God." Bernadotus, the inquisitor of Toulouse, instructed the layman as to never argue with the unbeliever, but as to thrust his sword into the man's belly as far as it'll go. George Raleigh Scott described how the inquisitors gorged with their inhumanity and developed a degree of callousness rarely rivaled in the annals of civilization, with ecclesiastical authorities condemning every faith outside of Christianity as demonic. Not just Christianity, but complete allegiance to the papacy. Even the very fact of having a charge brought against you and being summoned to the Inquisition, and that's where the judges are sitting to see if you line up, was the subject of terror to the bravest men and women. For very few who entered the doors of torment ever emerged with wholeness of mind and body. If they escaped with their wife, with their life, they were, with rare exceptions, maimed physically or mentally forever. Those who did not happen to endure the dungeon generally went mad in captivity, screaming out in despair to escape. Others willfully committed suicide during their confinement. In the ages of faith, when the priest was less than a god himself, a curse from the priest's lips was often more feared than any torment. To even establish an accusation against the bishop required 72 witnesses, against the deacon 27, against the dignitary 7, and against the clergy 2, to even bring a charge against one of the church leaders. Whole communities went mad with grief and fear at the thoughts of being denounced in the Inquisition. It spread all over Europe. Men, women, children, all legally murdered on the evidence by the church, which today would only be accepted unless the court and jury specifically were composed of lunatics. So tens of thousands of people killed by the papacy on flimsiest of evidence. The children of those parents murdered were usually forced to beg on the streets, for no one dared feed or shelter them, thus incurring a suspicion of heresy upon themselves. The suspicion was sufficient enough to drive away even the closest friends of the unfortunate. Sympathy for them would be interpreted as heresy. Listen, again, and I'm just sharing this with you because in our day and age, in the comfort of America, people are thinking about there's going to be this coming Antichrist and he's going to reign with terror. I'm not saying I don't think that's going to happen, but if that's what you believe, I'm not criticizing you. All I'm saying is that it's already happened. For 1,000 years, 500,000 people every 10 years was killed by the papacy. For 400 years, you were afraid to have friends that might not be in association with the church because they may think that you weren't, and you were in deep trouble. One more page. Here are some of the things that happened during the Dark Ages. Pope Paul IV, in 4 years, 1555 to 1599, in his Inquisition alone, now the Inquisition has lasted 400 years basically, in 4 years, in his Inquisition alone, by torture, starvation, and fire, murdered more than 150,000 Protestants. The Catholic crusade against the Albigenses in South France in 20 years under Innocent, Honorius, and Gregory IX murdered between 1 and 2 million people. The 30-year war, which was the Catholic attempt to destroy Protestantism, killed the high number is 15 million, but it's probably around 10 million. In the 30-year war, the armies of the Catholic Church reduced the population of Germany from 20 million to 7 million. Took out 2/3 of the Germans over a 30-year period. So it might have been larger than that. In Bohemia, the population was reduced from 4 million to 780,000 people. Now you talk about, you remember the where it said, the little horn will rise up and will pluck up three horns. So three kingdoms. That is commonly believed to be the Heruli, the Vandals, and the Ostrogoths. During its rise, the papacy essentially exterminated the Heruli around 493, the Vandals in 533, and the Ostrogoths in 554, all of whom asserted to hold the Arian belief. Arianism was a heresy. Arianism believed that Jesus wasn't fully divine, that he was a lesser God. And it is a heresy. But essentially, the papacy exterminated three entire nations. It was reckoned that during the reign of Justinian, Africa lost 5 million inhabitants because the Ostrogoths were there. They killed 5 million people in Africa. There were two large genocides, as if these weren't genocides. Estimates for the number killed of the Huguenots in 40 years in France range as high as 4 million, and probably almost all of these were killed by the Catholic armies. Although the king was doing the bidding. The general cry was turn papist or die. Those who were not put to death suffered imprisonment, had their houses pulled down, their lands wasted, their property stolen, their wives and daughters were raped, they were sent into convents. If any fled from these cruelties, they were pursued through the woods, hunted and shot like wild animals, and at the head of the dragoons in all the provinces of France marched the bishops, the priests, the friars, and the clergy, leading the army to commit the genocide to keep up the cruel spirit of the military. Think about that. Upwards to 4 million. Hitler killed 6 million Jews, and we think he was the most evil man alive. Have you read about the Dark Ages? And I'm just saying, people are talking about what's to come, and they haven't read the history yet. What you're saying is coming. It might be coming, but it was already here. 4 million. The Cathari, which were similar to the Waldensians near the end of the 12th century, the Dominican Renarius, who was a Catholic historian. This is coming, this is not the product, this is the Catholic. Dominican Renarius gave 4 million as the safe estimate of the number of the Cathari, which was a group within France who the Pope declared as heretics, 4 million as a safe conservative number of how many were killed. And it could have been as high as 8 million. So you're talking about two genocides within 100 years of each other that rivals what Hitler and Stalin did. And that doesn't count all the other genocides. 50 million is a conservative number over that time period. Now again, the papacy turned Europe for 1,000 years into a torture chamber. And when I hear, again, believe what you want, but when I hear people talking about everything the future Antichrist will do, it's like, that joker isn't as bad as the papacy was. It happened. Now, you can say, it's going to happen again. That's okay. I sort of think the papacy fulfilled those prophecies. But, and that's been a general understanding for 400 years till about 1910 or 1920 in Protestantism. But again, I say, until the Antichrist gets here, if that's where you're at, what happened in Europe for 1,000 years will do. It'll do. It was an absolute reign of terror. Yet, here comes the Protestant Reformation. And there were two. See, it's not the church we're talking about. It's the political aspect of whenever a church becomes the same thing as a government. See, the people who founded America knew their history. This is not what they wanted for America. When we talk about separation of church and state, we're not saying that Christians ought not be involved in the government. We're saying that Donald Trump and Joe Biden ought not be the head of the church. That's what we're saying. Because that's what was going on. That's what we don't want. We don't want Donald Trump or Joe Biden or whoever else follows Joe Biden telling the church what correct doctrine is and telling the pastors what they can preach and what they can't preach. And saying if you don't preach it, you're getting killed. That's what Europe was used to. But then after the papacy came Protestantism. And in Protestantism, you had the rise of two state churches in Germany and the Church of England. You had two great state churches rise up. And you know what those jokers did? Same thing the Catholics did. So when you think about America, we know that people came to America to escape religious persecution. Right? So, the Anabaptists, a lot of Anabaptists came to America, right? And you're probably an Anabaptist. That means to get baptized again. Anabaptists were folks who said, you might have been baptized as a child, but we think you need to be baptized as an adult. Well, how did a lot of them get here? Well, the Protestants under Zwingli persecuted them. And the Catholics under King Ferdinand persecuted him. At Munster in 534, which was their major city, they were surrounded by an army of Catholics and Protestants joined together. And they were tortured and killed, and their bodies were hung. The Catholics and the Protestants were, or those who did the bidding of the Church of England, the Church of Germany, got together and said, let's kill the people that we commonly don't like. And so the Waldesians settled in Valdese, North Carolina, a lot of them, and the Huguenots came here under Catholic persecution. The Puritans and the Pilgrims came here because of the persecution of the Church of England. And in fact, in England, you had for about 150 years at least the Test Acts. And this is what the Test Acts said. The Test Acts said that if you don't take communion in the Church of England, if you don't go to the Church of England and qualify for communion, you are not eligible for public employment, and I believe property ownership. I'm looking here in my notes. I went the wrong way. And then in Great Britain, from about 1600 up to 1900, Roman Catholics in Britain could not purchase land. They could not hold civil or military offices. They could not be in the parliament. They could not inherit property or practice their religion freely. So the Church of England comes up, like, oh, we'll get even. If you're a Catholic, you can't own property. You can't inherit property. You can't inherit property. You can't purchase land. You can't hold civil or military. See again, people say, you know, you got the mark of the beast, man. If you don't take them, and by the way, there's the mark of the beast, but there's the mark of the Lamb on the forehead. So everybody's saying, well, you got the mark of the beast. That's a computer chip. But what's the mark of the Lamb? Is that an Apple computer chip? Mark of the beast is a Dell? I don't. The reason that you have to have the mark of the beast is to buy and sell. Remember that in Romans 12? Whatever the mark is, you can't buy or sell unless you have the mark. So people say, well, there's going to come a time where you can't buy or sell unless you have the chip or something. Christians couldn't buy and sell under the Roman Empire. Protestants couldn't really do much, or true Christians really couldn't do much other than the Roman Empire or under the Roman Catholic rule. And when the Protestants got there, they said, you can't do much economically unless you do it our way. Unless you bear our mark, unless you're like us, you can't essentially buy and sell. See, it's already been done. I'm not saying if you want to believe in computer chips, you believe in computer chips. I'm just saying a lot of this has already been done. Been done for hundreds of years. Oliver Cromwell, who was a Puritan, went up and declared war in Ireland against the Catholics, and Cromwell, the Puritan, under the approval of the Church of England, killed conservatively 200,000 Catholics and maybe 600,000. So essentially, you had the Roman Empire killing Christians, you had the papacy killing Christians, and then you had the two church states of Germany and England. And when they got power, they said, let's kill Christians. Let's kill them. They don't do it our way. Let's kill them. So those were the three great eras of persecution. Now, why bring that up? And let me say this. See, I went a long time, so I don't have to explain a lot. Give me 10 minutes. That what I just described to you is what the Church of God believed that Revelation was primarily about. So, I'm not going to work through these symbols, but look at chapter 12, Revelation. Now, a great sign appeared in heaven. A woman, I can't prove this, I'll just tell you what they say. I got books for you if you want to read them. A woman clothed the sun and moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Church of God has traditionally believed that that woman is the early morning church. Then being with child, she cried out in labor and gave pain and great birth. Bible says that when Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. Zion, the church, when Zion travailed, she bring persecution. When Zion travailed, she brought forth children. So she gave birth, that child being us. And then there appeared in heaven a great fiery red beast, 7 heads, 10 horns. Where do we hear 10 horns? It's that fourth beast in Daniel, those 10 horns. So the Church of God has traditionally said, that 10 horn, that sounds like the Roman Empire to me. And that would make sense. If the church is being born, children are being produced, there stands the Roman Empire waiting to kill them. And seven heads, people who look at that say there were 7 different forms or 7 different types of rulership within the Roman Empire, because it kept changing. It started with a Senate, and then it went to a rulership of 3, and then a rulership of 10, and then it went into the Caesars, and then the rulership kept changing, but you had the 10 horns. And his tail threw down, drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to earth. The ideal is that the Church of God would have, the interpreters would have said the stars were Christians. We're little lights in heaven. And so the persecution of the Roman Empire was killing Christians and drew down a large number of stars or Christians. Now, anyway, go to the next one. So for them, that first beast. Now, it will say this is Satan, but the believer, the Church of God would say, that's saying that they were doing the work of Satan, as Jesus would say, Peter, get behind me, Satan. You're doing the work of Satan. And it's interesting that it's 7 heads, 10 horns. Now, what are the 7 heads? Well, it's 7 different kings. It's also 7 mountains. And it's also, verse 12, the 10 horns are 10 kings. So again, 10 horns are 10 kings. 7 heads are 7 consecutive kings. 5 have fallen, 1 is. And at the time of the writing, you had the 6th form of Roman government. And then, but the 7 mountains. So it's this dual symbolism. 7 heads are 7 types of government. It's also 7 mountains. And what does the next phrase say here? Next, Rome was always famous for being the city of 7 hills. So when it says you got a beast, it's got 10 horns, those are 10 kingdoms. The 7 heads are 7 other types of kingdoms, but it's also 7 mountains on which it sits. People say, well, that's the Roman Empire, man. It's the Roman Empire. That comes out of Daniel, and that comes out. So then, but then next phrase. Next slide. 7 famous hills of Rome. That dragon is sitting again. One more. But then, so you have the dragon waiting to devour the seed of the woman. But then, after the dragon came another beast. It's got 7 heads and 10 horns. So there is 1 dragon, 7 heads, 10 horns. Another beast, not the dragon, comes up. It's got 7 heads and 10 horns. Same thing. Now, the beast which I saw was like a leopard, yada, 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 and they worship it. And there's a lot of characteristics of that beast. Go to the next slide, if you will. And the beast seems to be the little horn. And there's several characteristics of the little horn in Daniel that are very much repeated on this beast. So the Church of God writers would say, well, listen. You got the Roman Empire. That's the dragon. Go back to the other side, if you will. I'm looking for something here. I don't see it. There's a place in Revelation that says the dragon gave its authority to the beast. So you have this dragon. The dragon gives its authority to the beast. Yeah. It was granted to him to make war. No, no, that's not it. Verse 3. Oh, yeah. Confusing me now. Beast. The beast looks almost like the dragon. Seven heads, 10 horns. They're very similar. The dragon gives its authority to the beast. They both sit on the city of seven hills. So the church of God said, huh? They're similar, very similar. They're located in the same place. Authority is transferred from the dragon to the beast. So the church of God said, that's the papacy. That's the Roman Empire taking the form of the papal empire. They rule from the same city. They're doing the same thing. 10 horns. But then, that wasn't the last beast. Show me the next slide, if you will. Next slide. Then there was a third beast coming up out of the earth. And it had 2 horns like a lamb. So what are horns? Kingdoms. All through this, the horns are kingdom. So we got a beast that's got 2 horns. It's like a lamb. It's gentle. But man, it fights like a dragon. The Church of God, at least the historians would say, those are the 2 horns. That's the Church of England and the State Church of Germany. So that's the issue there in Revelation. You have 3 great beasts rising up. Now there are others. You got the dragon who gives its authority to the beast. They rule in the same place, although authority is transferred. But then that's not the last beast. There's another beast. It looks gentle, but it's not. It's 2 horns. 2 horns means 2 kingdoms. So that was the ideal in Revelation. That's how you come from Daniel into Revelation. Whatever you think that last beast is, Revelation in Daniel is going to really determine what you think that major beast is in Revelation. And once you get that beast set in Revelation, basically you interpret on either sides of it. So Daniel sort of sets up what you think of Revelation. Any of that make any sense? You're just being nice, nodding, aren't you? I have some books for you if you need them. The good news is that the true Christians overcome all the persecution. There's beast after beast in Revelation, or Daniel, beast after beast after beast after beast. And the beasts represent things that are tearing up. They're out to eat you. They're out to grind you down. And then you come to Revelation. There's dragon, beast, beast. But the church is preserved by Christ. Preserved by Christ. There's still victory. So I don't know what the beasts are in your life. Let me apply this. I don't know what the beasts are in your life. I don't know if it's the next wife, if it's the next husband, know if it's a boss, know if it's a career. It might be a depression. Whatever the beasts are in your life, the point of prophecy is that we can have victory over the beast. That's the point. All right. I'm going to stand and pray, and then you can line up and start arguing with me.